Tricia.
Where are we at?
Public comment.
Yeah.
Kim Miller, please.
Don't sit down.
Good afternoon, Chairman Bernath and members of the board. Tricia's handing out a stack of handouts for you. Not necessarily for your reading, but to help make three points. For the record, I'm Ken Miller, co-representative of WFFA on the TFW Policy Committee. The first point I want to make is that I want to thank the Forest Practice Board and Mark Engel specifically for their suggestions at the November board meeting that we review prior template efforts in search of potential help while we're awaiting the science review of our template proposal. The first element handout shows some of the work product resulting from searching through those prior template efforts. We are working our way through these as meeting time is available. From my point of view, the policy discussions around these various elements for potential use in our deliberations has been excellent, with most parties participating in meaningful discussions. Second point, you have required a TFW policy provide our template recommendations to you at your board, your May board meeting. Policy currently intends to reach final conclusions by our March meeting so that everyone has time to review the final recommendations. However, to help encourage actually making your May deadline, I encourage you to include a template progress update on your next two board meeting agendas. Mark and I could do it. Alternatively, it could be provided by the Adaptive Management Administrator or TFW Policy Co-Chair. Without constant pressure from the Forest Practice Board, I fear that we'll slide even further past the 4+ years that it's going to have taken at this point to review our template proposal. And finally, at the risk of being repetitive, broken record, our NAG, and for the record, the second handout that I provided includes copies of our prior 11 attempts to get this board to consider an informational demonstration of the template proposal added to your work plan reviews, including for consideration today. In a lot of ways, it'll be similar to what board member Nelson suggested about the PHB field tool. I've been persistent and generally of good humor, but it's getting harder to smile about being ignored for so long. Some may have misunderstood this to be an advocacy presentation, which would not be appropriate until policy has done their work. It's simply an attempt to visually demonstrate the proposal you accepted so you will be better prepared when actual recommendations do come to you. It's also an easy way to demystify something that many continue to think is overly complex. I can work with anybody. I can follow whatever the accepted protocols are for such a field tool. We could simultaneously offer small forest landowners an opportunity to share their non-template concerns with the board, similar to what you provided in previous meetings for the cultural resource constituencies, and we could do it all in a half a day. I beg you to finally have a discussion on this long-standing request so I'll have something meaningful to share to our WFFA board meeting this Friday. Something other than a deafening silence so far that only reinforces their belief that the fix is in and we are just being strung along in hopes that we give up. be happy to take any questions. I will hang around for the work plan agenda. Any further questions?
Thank you, Ken.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
I have a statement. Sure. You know, Ken says something about, you know, giving up. I just want to make it plain and simple that I don't think the small forest landowners are going to give up. And I think that we should take a good look at considerations of what these folks are asking. I don't think they're asking too much, but I think that this board should give some consideration to what's being talked about here and build some hope with these folks, because I see hope kind of, from what I hear in the testimony, I see hope kind of fading away, but I'll tell you, they will not give up.
Thank you, Bob. We do have this on the agenda later on.
Okay. I'll hold it till later on, but I echo those. I was down at Ken's place in 2006 when the governor's red law signed the big federal assurances, and it's close. It's a really neat place. It'd be easy to get to, so I hope we will consider it.
Thank you. Okay, can I have Jim Peters, Ray Ants, and Karen Porter come up to the table? Opportunity, you know, I think all of you have been involved to some degree with staff as rule drafting and guidance drafting, et cetera, and goes on. And I guess this is an opportunity for each of you to clarify anything that you think staff needs to understand so that we get it right on all the alternatives. And I would suggest we start from the right and work our way to the left. That's
who's
okay.
Right. Who's right and who's
my
left?
My right, their left.
That's you, Ray.
That's you, Ray.
Okay. Chairman of the board members, thank you. Ray Nance, Kalispell Track. There's not much to clarify. Our proposal was taken straight from the science team's recommendations from the best fit. So we didn't really deviate from that. The only thing we added at the end was the anadromous floor cut after presentation by one of the tribal biologists for the Westside Tribes. And the only clarification I would give on that was we were really trying to help capture in the anadromous floor this conundrum that was happening with the rule and its interpretation used by municipalities to sort of non-fish, fish-bearing waters that were low elevation, low gradient streams, small low gradient streams. So I think it was more in recognition that there was some need to take the ambiguity out of the rule so that there couldn't be misuse by the rule outside of the forest practices division in use of the rule by others to create this opportunity for the destruction of fish habitat. So I appreciated that that presentation that the board was given, and I think that was really the impetus for why we were very supportive of an anadromous floor in that respect. As far as the PHBs go, we don't think that the anadromous floor is necessarily affected by the FHAM or the PHBs, as we believe those to be much higher in the watershed, that most of the anadromous floor floor is protected, but in those cases where it's not, we felt it was important to do that. And I don't know if that helps you, but I didn't think ours was unclear.
So from your perspective, Ray, staff is capturing your alternative correctly?
Well, we've had some issues with, I don't know why, but it took a while to get it right, but I don't think that was an interpretation. I just don't think they understood that we meant that to be statewide all the time. So they wanted to, I don't know why, but kind of mix the east side, west side proposal, because ours was one size fits all. Okay. But we got that all worked out, so there's been no issue since, like, I think the second meeting. So.
Okay. Yeah. Any board member questions for Ray? Jim?
Okay. Thank you very much. Ours hasn't changed at all either, and we presented that and handed that out at the last board meeting. But I just want to reemphasize that. You know, ID deems are still a strong part of our proposal, and you know, we had the 10% anatomous floor, and then any waters below that was presumed fish, and that included the laterals or the trims going into the main stem. That doesn't mean that through an ID team or a field meeting out there that a PHB could be at a lateral based on some other situations, and then electroshocking could be done during that. But we wanted to make sure that that was presumed fish habitat until you had a team that went out there and looked at that. And so that's kind of where we are at, and probably is different than where the industry proposal was on their 10% level. So if you have any technical type of, and then we have PHBs that deal with above the floor also. And so if you have any technical type of questions, I have Ash Robach here that can answer anything that you guys can.
Or members would be.
So then just to be, super clear, for the laterals that are above the anadromous zone, you were, you know, in agreement with the interpretation that came out from the board and Chair Burnett's statement towards the end of the meeting, that you start looking for the PHB in those laterals from the junction, right? So where there is a junction between the main stem and a lateral, and the main stem is fish bearing. You start the search for PHB at that junction. You don't assume the change.
That's true. Below that, yeah. That it's not the just having the mouth of that lateral is not a PHB.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
So yeah.
Okay.
Any other questions from board members? Jim. Okay, Karen.
Good afternoon. Chairman Burnett and Forest Practices Board members. For the record, I'm Karen Kubeliger, the Senior Forester with Washington Forest Protection Association. And just for the record as well, in your packet you have a handout, and it's a letter that was written by a person by the name of Jim Lynch, and it includes two documents. Those documents are identical to the documents that were presented on Valentine's Day to the Forest Practices Board and in our proposal. And I know that I labeled the letter 2017. I think I was going a little bit too fast when I was writing that. Anyway, these documents are identical. They are our proposal, and our proposal has not changed. And during the meeting, although some of the details of the implementation of our proposal were not extensively discussed, the proposal itself was properly before the board and accepted by the board in February. It is not our thought that the board had adopted a recommendation from the science panel related to the tributaries at that point in time. So before I launch into a little bit more discussion, does anybody have any specific questions, or do you want me just to continue?
Karen?
Okay.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Karen.
Okay, so when we put our proposal together, we started with what the science panel had put in place. And we built our proposal to address the criteria in the Forest and Fish Report and the HCP. And that criteria requires assessment of accuracy and equity and risk allocation. The line demarcating the boundary between type F and type N waters needs to be drawn as accurately as possible and in a manner that is equally likely to be over and under inclusive of fish habitat. Now, the reason that I say that is because it's important in terms of looking at the treatment of the tributaries. And I think there have been two areas that may have had some confusion, either with the staff, although I think that the staff understands this really well at this point. One is that as presented, our proposal anticipated that technical stakeholders would be evaluating and developing an anadromous layer. In our specific proposal, we did not have the percentages of 10% gradient or 7 or 5, but during the board's discussion, there was an adoption of an evaluation of 5, 7, and 10%. We think that there may be more opportunities to have more creative and interesting discussions on what those anadromous layer elements actually would be. Secondly, our proposal allows the use of tributary junctions to be evaluated as potential habitat breaks. Outside the anadromous overlay, these trib junctions could be used as PHBs if they met the criteria for the gradient, size, or obstacle. And we believe that that is based on the data that is included in the science panel's report, as well as the literature that was cited. And this next quote is actually from Exhibit 1 in our letter. And for tributary streams that are connected to the core anadromous overlay, those streams will also be presumed to be anadromous fish habitat unless a gradient PHB and or an obstacle PHB are present at the tributary stream junction with the adjacent core anadromous stream. In other words, a size-based potential habitat break alone will not be used as a PHB where no fish are found upstream of a tributary stream junction adjacent to the anadromous core water. Leaving these tributaries, especially the tributaries above the anadromous zone, outside of the evaluation reduces the accuracy of the proposal, we believe, and does not fully take into account the data that has been presented. So those were the clarifications that we have tried to make with staff, and I believe staff understands at this point in time. And we ask that the proposal be fully evaluated as it was presented in February, and if there are any additional clarifications, I'm certainly willing to entertain those questions.
Any other questions for Karen? Or Member Davies?
Karen, in my understanding, you said that you want to evaluate the tributary junction as a potential habitat barrier, and that recommendation or that proposal, that part of the proposal, is coming from the science panel.
No, the part of the proposal that comes from the science panel is the evaluation of the PHBs. The science panel had one line in the report that recommended that trib junctions not be used as PHBs. That recommendation was not a consensus recommendation, and we believe that recommendation is at odds with the literature that is cited in the report itself, as well as the data used in the analysis. There was also no opportunity during the science panel's process for that dispute to be resolved. And when a minority report was requested to be attached to the science panel report, that request was denied. And so there really hasn't been resolution of that particular point. We based our proposal, as I noted earlier, on considerations of accuracy and allocation of risk. And so we took the science panel's information in terms of the PHBs, as well as the literature and the data, and put together a proposal that we felt met the criteria of the Forest and Fish Report and the Habitat Conservation Plan.
Is the sentence that you're referring to, this one that says, for tributaries type F waters, laterals, the PHB criteria would start at the most downstream end of the tributary, and changes associated with the PHB criteria would be measured upstream from that location? And that was in August and December version of the report from the science panel?
That's correct, and that was not in consensus either in August or December or January.
I wonder if it would be helpful, and I don't know what the process is, but can we have, since Dr. Roney is here, can we have him address this issue? This seems like a big deal.
So, what is your question?
So Karen is, as I understand it, that saying that sentence was in dispute and that there is a lack of science behind that. And so I want to get to the bottom of that.
Okay. Let's just hold that for a second and see if there are other questions from board members or member Nelson.
Yeah, I feel a little bit uncomfortable in looking at the prospective merits of the technical parts of these three alternatives. The intent in the motion that I made that was passed was to look at different alternatives. We have three distinct alternatives here, plus the no-action alternative. And the idea was to analyze them for benefits to fish and costs associated with them. And at that point, it's my understanding that we can pick parts of each, all, or mix and match at some point. But I think at this point, to try and talk about the merits without those would be premature, number one. Number two, I think the biggest problem has been taking these three distinct alternatives, if you will, and translating them into rule language so that Mark Engel can write it down and everyone understands and the proponents say, yep, that's exactly it. That's what hasn't happened here. I would make the suggestion that Mark's rundown this morning on how they're going to handle the economic side of this, putting together a working group of people, qualified people, might be a good suggestion for this too. We have three different entities here. If we had three different entities on a working group to work, not with the board, because frankly, I don't understand all the nuances of the East Side Tribe proposal and the West Side. I'm not sure I understand all the handbook nuances. But I do understand the general principles and the policies that I pushed forward. It was to have their alternative analyzed. So the best way to do that is to have DNR, who's writing these rules, go back to the principles here, make sure that what they're writing, it doesn't matter if it's we agree with it or if it's right or wrong, we feel that way. But at this point, we need to get those alternatives written in the rule language for analysis. And then I think it would be the time for us to talk about what we like and don't like about some of these. That's my statement.
Thank you, Tom. Board Member Swedeen.
So I hear what you're saying and understand it. I have a couple thoughts, and one I want to piggyback on Board Member Davis's request. So first of all, Karen, I heard you say, and I want as a board member to have a little bit of response to your statement that what you presented, that we as a board had a chance to sort of read and understand that in full. And you made the statement that we voted on your proposal. And there was, your proposal is complicated and there were a lot of pages to it, and we got it as we were considering options. And I don't think we had an opportunity to fully digest everything that was in there. And so the way we discussed and presented it as a board, I fully understand and accept what you're saying, is that what got approved and interpreted wasn't the full of what you had on paper. But I don't think we had a chance to fully digest and understand what was on that paper, just because we weren't given, and I'm not blaming you for this, but there was just a set of circumstances in which we were given an enormous amount of information. We had a short period of time to digest it, it got summarized in a certain way, and that point that you made about that you want clarified in the laterals was not something that we had, you know, much extensive discussion on. And so I just think it's important for the record to note that, yes, we may have left something out, but we voted on what we thought was an inaccurate representation. So I just think it's important for me as a board member to not be characterized as voting on your full proposal as written in that memo, because that's not what we voted on. Because we didn't have time to fully digest it, and that's not what was sort of summarized in the three alternatives. So I just wanted to make that clarification.
Mr. Chair, I want to point out again, first of all, the proposal that came forward at the February meeting, I didn't see any changes in the clarification. So I don't feel that there is anything different between now and then, number one. Number two, we're not being asked to approve these things. We're being asked to analyze these things. And all I'm trying to say is that, yeah, you may not understand it completely. I'm not sure I understand it completely either. But the motion was to have it analyzed, to have it analyzed for benefits to fish and costs to people, just like the other two. I don't understand the Eastside Tribes one fully either. But I'm not voting, and I wasn't voting to accept that or to endorse it in any way. I was moving that we analyze it, and there's a big difference there.
May I finish my two-part question? Thank you. So I'm not going to spend a lot of time going to the nuance, but what I want to say is that it's not that I didn't understand. We didn't have full disclosure of what was, or explanation verbally, of what was in the paper to vote on. So I did not vote on what was in the paper, because I didn't. It's not that I didn't understand it. I didn't know things that were in there. So I think that's important to clarify. The more important point to what Board Member Davis asked for, the reason I would think that it's important for us as a board to think about what we're asking to be analyzed is that my interpretation of the science panel's recommendations is that it's important to not use a change in width at the junction between a lateral and a known fish-bearing stream, to use that size difference alone as a barrier, because you run the risk of having a lot of false negatives, and that there's plenty of data to show that there are times of year and there are enough instances where fish use that we could be putting a significant portion of potential fish habitat at risk of not being identified. And so my question at this point in time, I mean, certainly you can vote to analyze that as an option, and we're not accepting it, and I agree with that, but are we analyzing something that doesn't actually meet the intent of our rulemaking process, which is to meet ONO, to protect fish at all life stages that are present at all times of the year. And I'm not sure, based on, and I hear you say it wasn't consensus, but my understanding is that it was, you know, sort of a 7-to-1 interpretation of the data in order to move ahead with that piece of the recommendation. So I think it's important for us to acknowledge that and to ask whether or not we're gonna be analyzing an option that the science panel essentially is saying, is it gonna protect fish habitat? And is that consistent with what we're trying to do here?
So the question I have is, if we go ahead and analyze the landowner's proposal fully, then wouldn't that come out in that analysis?
So
potentially.
That's a good question.
Or, I mean, that question could be asked of all of the alternatives, right?
Right. Yes, it should come out. We should know. And I mean, if we want to do that, that's fine, as long as we're guaranteed that the way that the analysis is going to be structured is that we can see the differences, not just in cost and not just in economic benefit, but in actual biological benefit, and with the criteria of, like, are we actually meeting the obligations of the HCP and the intent of the rule.
Okay. Mark, so based on the testimony this afternoon, do you feel staff have a full understanding of all the alternatives now?
I guess if we were to, that's hard to answer. Because I understand from both tribal, for the industry, I guess the question is, we have the memos, and if the, it's if we were to fully identify all of the PHPs in the full context of the memos. And we have met with industry, and we do understand what they're saying. We would just have to compare it to the memos. So from that perspective, if it's all there, and I confess I don't have it memorized, yes. It's kind of a qualified answer.
So. Okay. So then maybe I can release these guys at least temporarily. And could you come up and talk about how you're going to do the analysis? Because I've heard several caucuses ask how you're actually going to do the analysis.
Mr. Chair, I just have a question. My understanding is, as it pertains to our proposal, there was a motion to accept that and to go forward into the process, things like that. I'm a little confused as if you guys are going to be doing another motion. And how does that affect our proposal? Because I'm getting a couple different vibes from, is there going to be a different motion that just deals with the better understanding of what the industry's proposal was, or is it going to incorporate all three? And I just want to make sure that there isn't a misunderstanding of what our proposal was and how we were assuming what that process was going to take from the February.
Well, what we want to do, I mean, if there's a motion to clarify, then we want to make sure it's a clarification, if needed, on all three proposals, right? Alternatives, excuse me, not proposals.
Alternatives, yeah.
And we want to be as specific as we can so that there's no chance of misinterpretation down the road.
And I don't think we've received any confusion on our proposal, so I just wanted to make that clear. Thanks. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Okay, so good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the board. In thinking about the question just asked, I would think the plan of attack would be that staff will meet with all three proponents of the PHP alternatives and make sure we have full clarity. I'm hearing that's what the board is asking us to do. So we'll start there. Earlier today, I told you that in order for the board to consider a rulemaking, you need a full rulemaking packet, is what we've been calling it. And part of the answer, Board Member Sweeney's question, is that the board, in considering rule, does have to look at the costs, the benefits, as well as the biological impacts. And that's why you get a complete packet. So we do a cost and benefit analysis where we're looking at the costs and the benefits. We have to compare them in like terms, such as costs or in dollars.
And you also have to look at the biological effects, which would come through the SEPA, the environmental assessment. And that is looking at the science supporting the PHBs. And then you have to take everything as a whole in making a decision over the best alternative for the rule. And the rule is the implementation of the definition of fish habitat and all that else. So we do have, the rule is applied today. And you know, whether people want to debate it or not, that's how the rule is applied. We now have three PHB alternatives to be applied with FHAM. Each of those alternatives will establish the end of fish habitat or that type FHAM break. It is a comparison of each one of those to how we're doing it today, which would include the cost-benefit analysis as well as the environmental analysis. That makes the complete package for the board to evaluate in the period after you accept the draft rule. It's the draft rule plus all the accompanying documents. It's even including the board manual, because the board manual will tell you how to implement. It gives you guidance. You know, if you have these PHBs, here's how you find them. Here's how you identify them. So with that, I open it up for any questions.
Questions for Mark or members of Dean?
So my understanding is that the SEPA analysis is going to be a checklist and not an EIS. Is that correct?
It will start with the checklist, and then it will be determined if it has to go to a full environmental impact study. Okay.
So I think my concern is, that the SEPA process is where the science analysis is done. And that's, that's a great place for a full literature review, for this issue to be aired of there being, mostly but not entirely full consensus on the science panel about how you treat tributary junctions. But the effect, and so to say, hypothetically, and this is going to be a statement that's informed by my understanding of the science panel report, is that, I'm sorry, let me rephrase this. Will this analysis be able to look at the risk and impact to fish and fish habitat of any of the alternatives being underprotective? Will there be a way to get at that? Because I think that's what we're setting up. We're going to have an alternative, at least one of the alternatives, that sets up a situation where there could be habitat that goes from the tributary junction to the first PHB that's electrofished, instead of assuming, if it has access, assuming that it's fish habitat, and analyzing what the impact of that on actually accurately identifying fish habitat and what the impact on fish seems like an important piece of information for us on making a decision between the two of them. And then I would also anticipate that there will be a difference in cost between the two of them. There could be a higher level of buffering requirements on the tribal alternative that doesn't assume the tributary junction is a PHB versus the one that allows that to be a PHB. And so I just want to make sure that there's going to be rigorous enough science analysis that allows us on a parallel track to be able to make sure that we're assessing whether or not we're doing our jobs and following the rule. And then we know we have the other part of our job is to accept a rule that is the least costly as possible. So I'm just wanting to make sure that the whole package of analysis is going to allow us to answer the science part of the question, of that question.
Right, and that is the intent of the analysis, is to point those things out. Those things should become very apparent to the board when you're reviewing the full package, both the biological as well as the cost to the benefits.
And the EIS, excuse me, the SEPA analysis is just part of that.
That's correct.
So that, I think that's getting to your first question, is whether it all needs to be there or not. Because this analysis will be in the materials that comes to the board directly as well. So they may do a checklist, but still add the science that you're asking for.
Mr. Chair?
Correct.
I have a question. I know we're under a compressed timeframe here, but I'm more interested in getting this right than getting it done fast. That's, never mind. Would it be possible, because I'm thinking, we've got all these theoretical things going through our heads. We're all imagining a particular stream or a particular flag is going to be going someplace, at least I am. Would it be possible to get this package put together, as Mark just described very well, by the way, and find a watershed that we could go look at? In other words, here's a flag, here's end of fish, here's where the end of habitat will be under alternative A, the current, B, C, and D, so that we could see some of this. And one is not gonna, maybe we can find a drainage where there's more than one, but I think it would be beneficial for people to see this on the ground, to see what the differences might be in a given instance. It just, there's a whole lot of theoretical things floating around right now that would make more sense. It always makes more sense to me when I see something. Is it possible we could do that?
I mean, you're talking about, I mean, I asked Mark the question earlier whether there was going to be more field testing, and he said yes once everything was put together, right?
That's correct.
I mean, is that addressing Board Member Nelson's concern that we're actually going to go out and look at some of these before we get to the 102 stage?
It could be a spring field tour for the board.
I mean, is that what you're asking? Is for the board to go out?
Yeah.
Or are you asking for
Well, I'm asking for the board.
Staff,
I mean, this,
to go out.
This normally would have been taken care of through policy and CMR, and they would draw us this nice rosy package with a bow on it, but it didn't happen that way. So now we're going to be making this decision, so I think we should go look at it. I know Ken's place is too flat, otherwise we could go look at it there. So.
Right.
Do them both, same day.
I don't have a...
We'll try.
I don't have any reason not to do that, okay, other than time and cost. So let's talk about that. Let's talk about that. Towards the end of the agenda, I want to talk about field trips. And Mark, when do you think that would be best done for the board?
I would think probably we have a lot of work to do to get ready for this, including, you know, the completion of the analysis. We, you know, we're still trying to clarify exactly what the PHPs are that we need to. Perhaps a check-in at the February meeting would be best, and to set a date. I mean, this is something I've never considered till right now. So,
I mean, because we still have a goal to have the CR 102 and all the documents ready for the board to consider by May. So, depending on where you're at in your analysis in February, you could recommend, yeah, let's go out in March or something and take a look at a few of these.
Yeah, the priority for staff is to get all of the materials prepared for the board for your May meeting. I guess an update would be in order in February, but there's no guarantees. The priority is getting all of the materials prepared for the board.
Well, you'll give us an update anyway in February, right?
That's correct.
And then we could consider the field tour at that time for this specific item. Would that work?
I think that'd be helpful. I do.
Okay. Other questions of Mark as far as process moving forward? Okay. Thank you, Mark. Is there people signed up for public comment on this, Patricia? Board Member Herrera.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not signed up for public. You know, I've kind of struggled to walk through what we're trying to do here, and I listened to Board Member Nelson's comments, and I've heard him several times say that analysis was to look at the benefits to fish and the cost benefits of a rule. And so I keep asking myself, you know, what are the benefits to fish going to be, and even maybe more broadly, as I try to think about how we're meeting or maybe not meeting our obligations under the HCP. And I would be interested in seeing if we could have the federal agencies who were the holders of the HCP come and talk to us maybe at the November meeting, and looking at what we're trying to do here in these options, and help us to maybe tell us whether they think we're meeting the intent of the HCPs in the terms of benefits or protection to fish habitat here. Because I feel like over the years I've been here, seems like so much of the time it feels like we keep chipping away at protection of fish and fish habitat. So I just wonder if we couldn't engage the agencies to come and tell us what they think.
Perhaps
in our November.
Perhaps we could invite them to the field visit where we see them on the ground.
I'm sure we could do that. We could do either or both, as far as I'm concerned. And would you like me to extend that invitation?
Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks. I think timing, you have to think about the timing, because the more analysis we have of the alternatives, the easier it's going to be for them to weigh in as to what they think is more effective. So I'm not sure if November is the time or some point thereafter, but I'd be very interested as well in hearing their thoughts.
Thank you. Well, I don't want to hold that.
Yeah.
Getting the analysis done. We've been trying to do this for a long time, and I guess maybe we should talk to them and see maybe what they think the opportune time
to weigh in.
Would be.
Well, along with, I mean, it goes back to the same issue as we talked about with the field tours, making sure staff's got it. They're down the road enough that they can share with, and we, staff does have monthly meetings with the feds, and particularly after their letter that we got last month, you know, we're going to be on the hook for being very much more engaged with them and keeping them informed. So it's, I'll talk to them about timing and so forth. Thank you for that.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. Can we, thank you. Patricia, have a comment. Vic Musselman, please.
Good afternoon, Chairman Banaff, members of the board. My name is Vic Musselman, and I am president of the Washington Farm Forestry Association. And I just want to take a few minutes to reiterate basically what Steve Bernemeyer said in or testified to you in February, and that is that small forest owners prefer using physical descriptions and when they are preparing their FPAs and typing their streams. they would support additional rules that define the point of habitat break if the rule is adopting improved physicals. The best of all worlds for small forest owners would be the completion of a LIDAR study which derives the description of the stream courses and all their various physical definitions of the state streams. Thank you very much. I answer any questions.
Thank you, Vic. That was pretty clear.
Just reiterating what Steve said. I want to keep it before you.
Yeah, gotcha. Jamie Glasgow, please.
Thank you.
Chair Bernath, members of the board, I'm Jamie Glasgow, representing the Conservation Caucus. I wanted to revisit, if I could, just for a minute, the WFPA clarification of their PHB alternative. This is a big deal for us because one of the most significant concerns we have with water typing as it happens now is that of the false negatives that Board Member Sweeting mentioned. And you've heard me say before, we have great concerns about meeting the intent of habitat, type F habitat, as defined in 010, when we're allowing electrofishing surveys to occur on just one day and trying to make a statement about fish use that may occur throughout the year. We have
Jamie?
Yes.
Just, I missed this previously. Talk about false negatives, what that means, so that all the board members understand.
Fair enough. By false negatives, I mean electrofishing a stream reach on one day of the year, not finding fish in that reach, and determining then that it's type N non-fish habitat, when in fact it may well be type F fish habitat because it's used by fish on other days than the day you were there.
Thank you.
Sure. We have some new data from a study that the Snoqualmie Indian Tribe did in partnership with Wild Fish Conservancy in the Snoqualmie watershed, which provides some more quantitative information about that concern and how frequently it may be occurring, at least in this study basin. We were able to use environmental DNA or eDNA to sample 75 sites within the watershed. 29 of those sites happen to coincide with type N, the downstream ends of type N reaches. These are stream reaches that had been water-typed using a protocol electrofishing survey. Water-type mod forms were submitted and approved. So these are field-verified type N stream reaches, 29 of them. And of those, we found fish presence using eDNA in 9 of them, or about 30% of them. Again, one part of a very large state, but I provide that just as an example of the potential significance of the issue we're talking about. And one that I thought the board had addressed in the WFPA, the landowner alternative, in February by not adopting their proposed use of size alone criteria, comparing main stem streams to tributaries or laterals that flow into that main stem. All three stakeholder PHB alternatives proposed to the board in February were built on the board's PHB science panel's report recommendations. But the landowner's alternative is the only one with elements that directly contradict a key recommendation from the board's science panel. The PHB criteria for tributaries, this is the quote we heard earlier from the report, PHB criteria for tributaries or laterals start at the most downstream end of the tributary, and changes or thresholds associated with PHB criteria are measured upstream from that location. With that conclusion stated in multiple places throughout the board's report, the science panel recommends against using channel width comparisons between type F streams and their tributaries as a PHB criterion. The panel's recommendation is very logical and supported by the scientific literature. During different times of the year, fish are likely to use tributary habitats that they can access, and a 20 to 30% reduction in channel width alone does not restrict fish access. Recall that the purpose of PHBs and the FHAM is to limit electrofishing to stream reaches where fish are unlikely to be present, reaches that are largely inaccessible to fish. So if a tributary is accessible to fish, but no fish are found on the day of an electrofishing survey, it will be incorrectly identified as type N, even though it is likely to be used by fish during some part of the year. This issue was specifically discussed at the February board meeting. The board's meeting minutes show Chair Bernath, and this is a quote, said, "The science panel was very clear on how laterals should be treated." He said he would ask staff to move forward with the analysis consistent with the science panel's recommendation, assuming a lateral stream is accessible from the main stem. The bottom end of the lateral would be the starting point for the beginning of the stream assessment when looking for end of fish habitat. He mentioned this to avoid any conflict regarding that practice when the results come back to the board in June. End quote. Yet here we are. This is exactly what's happened. On July 19th, board staff member Mark Engel wrote a memo reiterating that the board's February motion as it relates to the WFPA alternative did not consider PHBs at tributary junctions. Mr. Engel specifically states that the board did not discuss the ramifications of moving forward with a PHB alternative component that is at odds with the science panel's recommendation. The Conservation Caucus agrees and supports the February board motions as written. Given the time frame we've all committed to, we can't accept yet another setback. The board convened the PHB science panel to meet RCW best available science requirements. We trust the department and the board will continue to adhere to the best available science and their science panel's conclusions. Be happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Jamie. Kevin Godden. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
that's all right.
Come on.
I skipped over Peter.
That's okay.
It wasn't intentional.
Members of the board, my name is Kevin Godwin. I'm with the Weyerhaeuser Company. Chairman Bonat, thank you for the opportunity to comment, and welcome Ben. So I just want to start out thinking about the big picture, and I think you all know this, but we've done a lot of work on this issue, and we continue to make a lot of progress. And if you think about forest and fish, you know, it is the premier salmon recovery plan that we have in the state. And we've been at this for 20 years, and as landowners, we're really proud of all the work that we've done, whether it be RMAP or adaptive management process. But we've been fully committed to salmon recovery, and our participation in this process, I think, is notable. And I would just say that it doesn't happen with just the landowners, it's all the participants in the room, it's the TFW spirit, along with the landowners, the tribes, the state and federal agencies, the Conservation Caucus, and even though we run into a few bumps along the way, the system continues to move forward, and I hope that we will continue to make progress on this important issue. I'd also say that the Weyerhaeuser Company would be glad to host the board out in the field. When we were developing the original forest and fish agreement, we did host multiple legislative tours in our Vail Tree Farm. We were able to put various alternatives out on the ground, pilot studies, take people through them, the general public, particular stakeholders, and I think it really does make a difference if you can get out and then kind of see the differences between alternatives and have a discussion out there. And to that matter, we're continuing right now to participate in moving this process forward. We've been hosting field trips to work on the board manual. We're participating in the validation study work on our various tree farms, and we're providing additional data. So we're all highly motivated to meet the board's timeline and move this rulemaking forward. So in terms of the discussion right now, you have several alternatives that we have brought to you, or the caucuses have, and I would just urge the board to accept the proposals as presented and proposed by the proponents. We believe that the landowner proposal, it was properly vetted. Whether it was understood, I think Mr. Nelson has identified that in a board like yours, there's a lot of proposals, a lot of technical detail. You're not going to understand it all at the time, perhaps, and it's up to the staff to do the analysis process to bring back those you know, cost and benefits, and then you can make a decision. So I support moving forward as the proposals were presented to you, and I do not believe you need an additional motion. I think you've clarified it, and I think you can give instructions to staff, and then we can kind of move forward. I think there's a couple of concepts I think you also need to consider is that while we have talked on and off about the science panel process, this water typing rulemaking is the accumulation of many board alternatives and many pieces of work and literature that has been brought to this board over the last 2 to 3 years. You know, the FHAM process, the science panel. We have the TFW policy recommendations on water typing that was related to off-channel habitat that also addressed the issue of accuracy, balance, and kind of the fairness of the rule. So there is a big body of knowledge that you can pull from. And so just cherry picking, if you will, and I'm not saying anyone is, but just pointing out that one particular proposal may say not do this, but you've got a variety of other, you know, documents in the record that clearly allow, you know, a variety of alternatives to go forward, and particularly, you know, the Forest and Fish HCP and the biological opinion, all the supporting data and information. There's even the old Cole study, which was done by Seymour, that looked at this question of variability in fish on lateral streams. And so there's a huge body of knowledge. So I don't think our proposal that we presented is out of bounds at all. I think it fits with the administrative record, and we think that the process you've outlined, Chairman Bernat, potentially here with staff going to do the analysis and bringing that back is the proper way to do that. So with that, if you have any questions, I'd be glad to take them.
Thank you, Kevin.
Thank you.
Peter.
Good afternoon, Board. Peter Goldman, Washington Forest Law Center and Conservation Caucus. Mr. Godbout and I have offices within 2 blocks of one another, so we see each other all the time. I want to just reiterate what Jamie just said. I'm a little concerned that we are now embarking on looking at an alternative that was not that had been voted for, had been voted on, and had been passed through, and now we're hearing that it is at odds with the science report itself, and that is concerning. It is the board has a duty to look at different rules that are variants of one another to sort of compare and do the cost benefit, etc. But it doesn't have to accept any one alternative as the sort of bookend, so to speak, of those various alternatives that it's looking at. It might be that WFPA is saying we like this bookend, but that doesn't mean the board has to adopt that bookend. So the board has to say what bookend do we use to sort of compare different alternatives. And it just seems to me very much at odds. And I would like to hear Mr. Roney specifically address the board member Swedeen's question. Board member Davies' question on to what extent is this idea at odds with the science report of basically saying that there are certain tributaries that can be automatically deemed not potentially supportive of fish. And it seems like that just comes out of thin air. And the board should not embark on an alternative that just comes out of thin air just because one particular stakeholder group is asking for it to be viewed as a bookend. So I think that's a really important question. At the end of the day, how does the board make its decision? And the real question is the board already has a rule that defines fish habitat. And that's where fish can go any time of the year. Even in restored watersheds or where they are today or where they could potentially go through restoration. And if a report, an expert report that this board commissioned and spent a lot of money on has said that they can get past these tributaries, then I don't see why we're studying, proposing a rule that would say, well, if they can't get past, those tributaries could potentially be the end of habitat. It just doesn't make any sense. So if we're gonna keep it grounded in science, we always have to look at the rule, the 010 rule, which is 16010, which is the definition of fish habitat. So I think it's really important to get to the bottom line of, does this actually open up habitat? Does it reasonably describe what are barriers? And if it doesn't reasonably describe what are barriers, then I just think it's it's too late and it's out of the question. Now, it could always be added in later in the rulemaking process because there's a lot of little forks in the road ahead. But as far as staff looking at what the alternatives are, I don't know why we would ask staff to go walk down a rabbit hole to a place where we don't want to go in the first place. Thank you.
Thank you, Peter. Scott Swanson.
Chair Banaff, members of the board, my name is Scott Swanson. I'm a contractor for the Washington State Association of Counties. And I've come up today just for one thing to talk about. I was not able to participate in your meeting in February of this last year because I was actually out of state. But since that time, I've had an opportunity to listen to your deliberations orally, also reading minutes, and then had an opportunity to participate for the counties in the language, for the rule language processes as we started into putting together the packet after being invited by the Department of Natural Resources. And all of a sudden, there was this concern about not understanding what one of the alternatives was. And I've always felt pretty comfortable with what the three alternatives were from just going through, even though I wasn't here present that day. So I'm a little bit surprised that you're having a time to deliberate again today on just how you're going to put forward other instructions to the staff. Because I felt that it was pretty clear that it made sense to analyze all three alternatives and move forward. So I don't know really why that's going on at this time. I'm not sure of how that conversation occurred. I know that there has been conversations that I was not privy to during the last month or two on this particular thing, but to me it makes sense to move forward analyzing all three alternatives as they were brought forward to you. Thank you.
Thank you, Scott. Okay, what I'm gonna suggest is we take a 20-minute break. It gives us a chance to talk to each other as well as take a biological break. And let's come back and be ready to figure out how to move forward.